Our reading this morning comes from my colleague James Ishmael Ford. It's called Beginner's Mind, and it's from his wonderful book, If You're Lucky, Your Heart Will Break. He writes about learning to sit, to meditate in the Zen style, Zazen. He is both a UU minister and a Zen priest. At its heart, it's very simple. Pay attention to your breathing. Let your mind clear as you notice distractions. Notice them, but then let them go. And this, at least, is the beginning. He writes, turns out there's three principal variations on distraction. The first is to notice one has been distracted and to blame the environment. It is too noisy outside, or the kids are too loud. My neighbor's belly is making horrible noises. Of course, to get into ascribing responsibility for the distraction is just a meta-distraction. The deal is to notice the distraction and return to one, to notice your breathing, to start over. Another variation in that meta-distraction is to rebuke yourself. I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough discipline to do this. And of course, this is simply another variation on blame, turning the blame inside rather than outside. Notice, start over. And then there's the third distraction, the good thought. You've cooked up the plot for the great American novel. You've finally figured out what to say to that annoying coworker. You have a business plan, finally. Whatever it may be, it's too good to let go of, but if it is, in fact, that good, it should be recallable later. And if one wants this sitting practice to work, the deal needs to be to notice and return, usually to one. Just start over. If you find yourself having all your great ideas in Zazen, in sitting, you may want to set aside a separate time to sit your cushion with a notebook beside you. But don't, he writes, mistake sitting with a notebook for the spiritual practice of Zazen. After my first sitting at the Zen Center, I was ushered into an interview with a senior priest, Ford says. Dainen Katagiri Roshi, then called by the title Sensei, was on duty. I made the bows as I was instructed and sat awkwardly before him. He asked how long I'd been sitting. I estimated 3, maybe 5 minutes. He said, good. Keep that mind. Shunryu Suzuki, a great Zen master, liked to call and recall people to this beginner's mind, which he pointed out has within it many more possibilities than one will find in the mind of an expert. Just start over. As the years passed and I began to take on responsibility for sharing the practice with others, I came to see a few points that I continue to share with beginners about that beginner's mind. Notice and start over. And thus ends our reading. So those of you who are here in July for our candidating week might remember that I said I like to know things and like to be right. In fact, probably just as much I want not to be wrong. And that's just a little summary for those of you who didn't hear my sermon a couple months ago. And an introduction to part of why I love the reading we just heard from our colleague James Ford. He writes about that concept of beginner's mind in which we are open to new things, ready to question the things we think we know, and aware even that expertise can be both a great help and a limitation, something that perhaps closes down our worldview. And I imagine that's a scary thought for a lot of us Unitarian Universalists who are experts in all sorts of things. And I do think that knowing things is great, certainly better than the alternative of knowing nothing. And yet it does mean that sometimes we come into all sorts of situations with preconceived notions, even ones that are not helpful. Because as I lifted up to our children earlier, here's the thing. I don't know, and Kristen doesn't know, exactly what's next for this congregation. Now, we have a lot of ideas, and we have a lot of belief and faith and optimism and a vision of what a healthy, vibrant, world-changing congregation can look like, one of many ways it can look like. We've both been to seminary, and we've worked under and with some amazing ministers, done ministries of our own, both together and separately in different congregations. So, as I lifted up, we are experts. Our expertise is in parish ministry and in worship and religion. So we have a lot of ideas and knowledge, and I have no doubt we'll be sharing much of that with you in coming years. But we certainly don't know it all. And to remind myself of this, I like to think back in time and do a little exercise. I hope you might join with me. So imagine it's 1981. It's 35 years ago. It's also the year in which I was born, not coincidentally. You may remember Ronald Reagan became president that year, or many other things. My family's first computer was just a few years later, an early Macintosh. And I'm still an Apple guy. I'm reading off an iPad right now, and I have an iPhone in my pocket and an Apple laptop at home. In that same period, the Challenger disaster, and who could have foreseen the end of the Cold War, or today, the modernization of China, or September 11th, and we could name dozens of changes to national borders and wars and natural disasters that have happened since 1981 that I don't think any of us could have predicted. I like to think about technology, about that iPad I speak to you of which. The internet, mobile phones, I am just young enough to not really have that great an idea what it was like before mobile phones. I know growing up in my family, we only had a landline, obviously, and I did use it, and people called me on it, but I had a cell phone by the time I got to college, and we talked one day about how we planned getting together before we had cell phones, and I thought, it must have involved a lot of work. Like, I'll meet you at a certain time and place in a couple days, when now I could just text somebody. I don't know if that's an entirely good thing, but I'm putting it down in the plus column. So if I had stood here in 1981 and tried to give you a picture of what the next 35 years of the world or even just of this congregation might look like, what would take us up to today, I'm sure I would have been horribly wrong. I would have told you all sorts of things that never came to pass and missed the really important things that have. So if I do that today about the next 35 years, I assume I will be equally wrong. Though some trends I do think are here to stay, that is, the effects of climate change will be with us for a long time. I imagine that healing America's deeply troubled, deeply racist, both history and present, is a task that will take far more than those 35 years I look ahead. Hopefully there are some good trends that will continue too, technology putting us ever more in touch with one another. Medicine doing more and more to help us be safe and healthy. So today I'm not about being right or trying to predict the future. The thing that we're called to do is to live faithfully. To live as if what we do matters and as if the things we do also affect the world around us. That's about living in covenant, acting rightly towards one another, building each other up rather than tearing each other down. And about working to find ways for all humanity and all living creatures and all the earth to live together in peace and safety and health. Our call is about creating what many have called the beloved community, where all are loved and valued. So I don't know exactly what our tasks in this journey of creating beloved community will look like in years to come, though, like many of you, I'm guessing, I have some ideas. I don't know exactly what this community might look like or who will be a part of it, though I hope all of us are. And I don't know exactly what my or Kristen's role as ministers will be, though, like I said, we have a lot of training and experience and energy and ideas to bring to that role, even as our work grows and changes in coming years. So on this, our first Sunday in the pulpit as brand new senior co-ministers, we make some promises to you, especially we'll make more of those when we're installed later this year. But today I want to make this promise, that I will come to you and return again and again and again and again and again to beginner's mind. That I want to learn about this community, both the one that meets here on Sundays and throughout the week, and the one all around us in Kensington and El Cerrito, Richmond, Berkeley, Albany, El Sobrante, Oakland, San Pablo, Pinole, where we just moved into a house, and Martinez, and all the communities from which we come and in which we live. That we promise to learn and grow with this community. So for each of us, I implore us to come again as a beginner to our work in creating beloved community. Let us remember that we are enough, that we always have each other, and that though we have made much progress, there is still much to do, and that we are always beginning again. So let us begin together.
Won't you please join with me in a responsive reading? The regular reading can be found in the back of the hymnal at number 600, The Space Within. It's not responsive in the hymnal, but we're going to read it responsively. The words are up on the screen. 30 spokes share the wheel's hub. Shape clay into a vessel. Cut doors and windows for a room. Therefore, profit comes from what is there.
Usefulness from what is not there.
Around the turn of the last century, a Japanese master named Nan In received a letter. A professor from a Western university wanted to meet with him, so they arranged a meeting, and Nan In welcomed the professor into his home. When the professor arrived and Nan In greeted him politely at the doorway, the professor brushed past, walked into the house, and sat down. Unfazed, Nan In closed the door and walked slowly to where his guest was impatiently tapping his foot. When Nan In asked the professor if he would honor him as his guest for tea, the professor answered, "Yes, of course I want tea, but let's get on with it. They say you are very wise. I'd like to get to know what you think you have to teach." "Certainly, I will gladly share all I know," replied Nan In. "But first, let us have tea." As the professor rolled his eyes, Nan In focused on his task. He prepared the tea to the perfect temperature, steeped it just long enough, but not too long, and set the simple, lovely dishes in an orderly arrangement on the cloth. After what seemed like hours to the professor, Nan In finally began to pour the tea. Master Nan In held the teapot over his visitor's cup and began to pour. The professor reached for the cup as it became half full, but Nan In kept on pouring. The tea rose and rose in the teacup, but Nan In kept on pouring. Even when the cup was full to the brim, Nan In didn't stop, and the tea began to run over the edge of the cup into the saucer. As Nan In gazed calmly at the overflowing teacup, the professor could no longer restrain himself. "The cup is full! No more will go in!" he cried. And Nan In replied, "Like this cup, you are full to the brim with your own opinions, your own importance. How can you learn anything from me unless you first empty your cup?" Now, while I'm always looking for stories to use in worship, This is one of a growing handful that I come back to over and over again, perhaps because of the wisdom it offers for navigating life's many beginnings. While I aspire to be like Master Nan In, I often notice within myself the tendency to approach new things a little bit more like the professor, eager to get to the point, to know what's in it for me, all the while missing that the tea right in front of me is not merely a nice beverage while passing wisdom, but the first piece of wisdom being offered. Whether in a new job, a new school year, a new relationship, or just the beginning of a new fall season, perhaps you have noticed how challenging it can be to resist wondering if this new thing will be like something or someone you've experienced before, wondering how to relate it to things you already know about. In new experiences, it can be tough to create space inside of ourselves, empty ourselves of preconceived notions and expectations, and to stay in the moment, surrendering to what the here and the now is offering us. The responsive reading we shared just a few moments ago conveys how important the idea empty spaces were to ancient Chinese philosopher Lao Tse. And we've explored one story from the Zen tradition about how emptying our cups allows us room for new wisdom. But this idea can be found in many religions. The root of the word for self-emptying in the Jewish Kabbalistic tradition is tzimtzum, and literally translated, it means contraction or constriction. And I find it so moving that this word is first used to describe an activity not of humans, but of God. According to the creation stories in the Torah, only God existed before God made creation. So one might wonder where God put all of creation if God was taking up all of the space. And this is where tzimtzum comes in. Basically, it's the idea that in a profound act of humility, God shrank or constricted the divine self so that there was room for creation to flourish, uncontrolled and free. In essence, and as centuries of theologians have written since, it was God's very first act of love. Alongside of all of the hopes and dreams and visions that have been growing in my mind and in my heart for the ministry that Christian and I will share with all of you, I have been praying with tzimtzum in mind. Because so far, in my experience, relationships and ministries and all manner of new beginnings seem to grow and flourish best when they are unencumbered, when they are uncontrolled by preconceived ideas, when they are free to take form in their own unique way and with their own unique trajectories. So in this season of different kinds of new beginnings, may we all find the courage to trust in what is taking root in and with and among us, in the here and the now, and in all of the heres and nows to come. It is so good to be here with all of you again, and I am so proud and so excited to be your co-minister. Thank you.
Thank you.
you all please join hands or link elbows or whatever way you want to get connected, please do so for our benediction. These words by Duke Gray. The blessing of truth be upon us. The power of love direct us and sustain us. And may the peace of this community preserve our going out and our coming in from this time forth until we meet again. And now our worship has ended and our service begins.
Thank you. Wonderful. First day.